Welcome everyone to iloverealestate.tv. Great to have you guys on board. Now today what I want to talk about is the process of finding a deal. It sounds easy. Well, maybe it doesn't sound easy, but it's really come about because I was been talking to my chiropractor, and he's kind of all over the place. He's been looking for a deal with positive cash flow and one that he can do manufactured growth on and all this kind of stuff, and he seems to be jumping around all over the place. So I thought the best thing to do is, other than just help him, obviously, is to actually do a bit of a podcast on how to find a deal and actually the process that you go through, because it's not just about jumping on the internet and doing a few searches and, oh, there we go. You really need to have a focused approach in order to be able to not only just find a deal, I mean, you can find any deal walking down the street if you want to, but finding the right kind of deal that suits you right here, right now. So what I thought I'd do is break it down into a step-by-step process. Now, the first thing you need to decide on is your time commitment. There's no good having a haphazard approach to actually finding a deal. What you need to do is to allocate a certain amount of time on a regular basis and commit to this business. And this business involves buying and selling and managing properties. So for that buying process, let's allocate a certain amount of time to really focusing on this business. Now, I prefer not to have long extended periods of time. I don't think that people's attention span is long enough to be able to cope with that. So what I prefer to do is to actually have short spaces of concentrated time. So somewhere between half an hour to an hour and a half is about as long as I'd really like you to sit at any one concentrated effort and really work on this. Now, the other thing that I like to do before you actually allocate that time is to have a mission statement or an operational statement about what it is you're going to do for that next half hour to three quarters of an hour. Don't let it go over that space of time, because your mind tends to wander and want to do other things. So if you get to about the hour and a half, jump up, go and have a cup of coffee, go and, you know, have a bit of a walk, whatever, clear your head, do the washing, come back, whatever it is for you, come back and then spend another half hour or so after that. So that time commitment, I mean, we all live busy lives, we're all out there, we've got families, we've got stuff on. So what we need to do is to look at our schedule for the week and go, all right, well, what of the time that I'm spending now can I reallocate to this real estate business? Now, it's a choice. It's not something like going on a diet or any of those things. It's a choice. You choose how you spend your time. So all we need to do is make better choices about actually spending that time. So think about how you spend your days now, from, 7 days in the week. How do you spend each one of those days? And for those of you who are working in a job or a business or something like that, most of you will say, oh, but I work through my lunch hour. I don't even get a lunch break. Well, that's wrong to start with. Allocate a lunch break and block it off. And, get out, and if you can't, close your office off so that, nobody walks in with disruptions and emails and whatever else, then go and sit on a park bench with your mobile phone or your iPad or your whatever else, and, have that break. Because during the lunch breaks are often a great time for those who are working to really spend some time on this business, even if it's only half an hour, to follow up on a phone call, to return that email, to inquire about this particular property or that particular property, and really relish that time. And if you do that, then for starters, you've had a break from whatever else you do during the day, and you've caught up on everything you need to do, and you really feel better about yourself, because what you've been able to do is achieve the goals that you're setting for yourself. So that's the first thing. I like to see a little bit every day, perhaps another half hour or so at night, and then a couple of hours each day on the weekends. That's probably enough. I replaced my income on 2.5 hours a week. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot of time, but that was enough for me to actually replace my total income that I was earning working, 5-6 days a week in my accountancy practice. And that's enough for you too. So after we've allocated a certain amount of time to make this happen, when you actually sit down to do your research, what I'd like you to do is to be prepared. I don't like having a cluttered desk, and nobody can work in a cluttered environment. So one of the first things I'm going to ask you to do is to get out there and clean your mess up. You know, wherever you sit down to do your work or whatever, have it organized. Have it so that you can have your space, you can write notes, and you're not looking at a whole heap of pile of papers or mess or undone filing or whatever it might be. So please clean up your clutter. Get rid of all of that so you've actually got a nice working environment. And before you sit down to do your first session, what I'd like you to do is to write a statement of what you're going to do for that session. So it might be, you know, research a certain area. It might be look for blocks of units in the one particular area, or look for a property of a certain land size to fit the strategy that you're going to do. And write a statement as to what you're going to do, where you're going to look for it, so that for starters, you're clear about where you're heading. Now, that does a number of things. First of all, it programs your reticular activating system. Now, this is a little thing in the base of your brain, which it fine-tunes your focus is really what it is. So when you're concentrating on something or you've given attention to something, what it does is it brings into your consciousness things that match that desired outcome. I'll give you an example. A mother, or a father for that matter, who has a baby in the house. Now, they can hear that baby's first whimper in the middle of the night, but they might live on a busy road and they don't hear the road noise that goes on all day long. It's basically like a radio that tunes you into certain things. You know, if you go and buy a certain model car or a certain coloured car, then all of a sudden every man and his dog seems to have one. You know, you notice them everywhere, whereas prior to that, you've never seen one before. It's really a focus. Focusing system is really what it is. It's called your reticular activating system. If you want to go and look it up, there's lots of reading in there, and there's a huge amount of work that you can do on centering and focusing your reticular activating system on a desired outcome. Now, one of the things that I'm asking you to do here is to have a clear statement of what your reticular activating system is going to be programmed to find. So when you've done that, you'll be looking for something particularly. Not just jumping around in a mad state of all over the internet, all over everything, and end up with nothing at the end. Because this was the trouble with my chiropractor. That's what he was doing. He's jumping around all over the place without a clear, defined statement of what it is he's actually after. So write an operating statement down of what you're going to do for that session. Now, that's the start. From there, you've then got to look for whatever it is that you're after. So what I'm going to do now is take you a step back. When you're analysing what you actually need in your portfolio, what we need to do is to discover the type of strategy that's going to suit your particular position, your particular financial situation right now, and your money that you have available, as well as your desired outcome. So the first thing we need to do is to decide on a strategy that's going to suit you. Now, whether that's, you know, you need to be doing multiple strategies on top of each other, or whether it's a case of, one particular strategy and that's your strategy. Now, the more you know and the more you learn and the more you see what the potential out there is and what kinds of deals give you what kind of outcome and what kind of money buys you what kind of deal and how long certain strategies are going to take, the more equipped you are to be able to decide on a strategy that's right for you right now. I mean, you might decide that you want to replace income, and you want to replace income yesterday, but you might be in a financial situation that determines you, well, you know what, you really need to go and do chunk deals first. You need to build up that equity base before you can start to go and have a look at income deals. Or vice versa, you know, you might have plenty of equity to be able to go and do, gain more ground from a wealth perspective, but if you don't have the serviceability, well, we need to concentrate on deals that are going to give you that passive income so that the banks like you better to be able to continue to invest. So first of all, we need to analyze your existing portfolio and what your capacity is, and then decide on a strategy that's going to suit your portfolio right here, right now. So we've written an operating statement of what we're actually going to look for. We've decided on the strategy that we're actually after. Now what I want you to do is to break down your search process into chunks. Now that might be, in this next half hour, I'm going to look for subdivision deals in the Gloucester area, as an example. Now, and I would have characteristics of exactly what I was going to look for in that chunk area. And I would write those out before I even turned on the computer. Then what I would be doing is looking for those characteristics in, I said the Gloucester area as an example. I'd be looking for properties for sale and properties not for sale in that Gloucester area that meet that certain criteria and characteristics. Now, that really hones your search in. It programs your reticular activating system to be aware and on the lookout for those types of deals. And that gives you the capacity then to be able to see those deals as they present, as well as being able to hunt out those deals, even if they're not for sale right now. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to only buy stuff that's for sale. You know, there's plenty of things that you can do and to create a sale if that's what you're actually after. Now, that list of characteristics that I've asked you to write out about that particular strategy is very important, because what you can do from that list is you can use it to do keyword searches on what that particular strategy is. It might have a certain land size. It might have, certain characteristics. And there'll be keywords that are associated with that with that particular strategy that you can start to search for. Now, there's lots of programs out there that you can use to assist with that search. But even the most common ones of, realestate.com and things like that, or domain.com, will give you the ability to be able to do that. So use those keyword searches to hone in on the types of properties that are going to meet that certain characteristic. Now, once you've found, a short list of properties, what I like to do is to have either two screens or two open screens on the one screen. Now, that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense there, but what I mean is I have a research screen, which might be my realestate.com or Investor or those search engines that I use. And then I've got a data caption screen, which might be an Excel spreadsheet. It might be a Word document where I pull interesting properties across from my search screen across to my data caption. And I'll copy the picture. I'm very big on visual, and I like to be able to see what I'm actually working with. So I'll copy the pictures across. I'll copy the details of a property across. And, of course, I'll copy across the price and the agent and who I have to all the contact details that I need. And I'll continue that search, and I'll continuously grab and cut and paste, so that I bring it across into a document which will create a file for me for that particular search time that I've set aside. So as go back to my example, I'm looking for a subdivision deal in the Gloucester area. I'll bring across all potential properties rather than get stuck on any one and then go down a garden path with that particular property. I'll accumulate as many as I possibly can into my data caption sheet, and I'll start to go through those. And once I've pulled everything across, then I'll start to analyze which ones are better than others, and I'll start to notice things like which agents tend to specialize in this particular area. Now, from there, I'll make a short list of the properties that I'm interested in, and I'll note that down the bottom. Meanwhile, I'm collating all of this, so I'm typing it out as I go. So I'm creating a document that I can follow and that has real core good information for me to go back to when I want to go back and research that particular area. Then I'll start my process of elimination and I'll jump on the phone. Now, a lot of people gravitate towards property investing because they think it's a strategy that you can use, or it's an industry that you can become part of, which doesn't require a lot of contact with other people. People do it because they're shy. When in reality, it's the most out there kind of industry that you can be in. Being a real estate investor should be quite a social event, because sitting behind a computer is not going to do everything for you. You actually have to get out and talk to people. So jump on the phone, ring up that real estate agent, follow that property through. You know, depending on what they tell you, go and talk to a town planner after that and check out the property. Go and, you know, talk to a surveyor, talk to an engineer, talk to all these professional people that are going to assist you in that process of actually achieving that end goal. Now, once you've honed in on a couple of properties that meet your criteria and the professionals say that yes, it's a doable deal, that it's something that's going to be able to be subdivided as an example, or whatever strategy you're actually after, the next thing to do is to start to collate the information and do a rough feasibility study. Now, it doesn't have to be 100% exact. What we're asking you to do is actually do a few numbers to work out roughly how the deal's going to pan out. And if you've got enough profit in there on your roughy, then it's worth investigating and going and getting actual quotes for everything that needs to be done on that particular deal. Now, if the roughy works, you really need to be time conscious of actually getting that deal for yourself. Now, in every state except for New South Wales, that's actually quite easy, because when the roughy works and you've done a few figures and you're convinced that, yes, this is the deal that looks like the you know, absolutely this is what we're going to go and do, then you need to put a contract on it. Now, a contract in every state except New South Wales can be a conditional contract, which means that we can actually have conditions in there that we can pull out of if we need to. So you can make the contract, for instance, subject to a pest and building inspection. Now, that's pretty normal to have in there, and because you don't want to be buying something that's absolutely eaten out by termites, or that isn't structurally sound. So they're normal clauses that you would have in there, and make sure that they're subject to your pest and building inspection to your satisfaction, not the fact that they've just actually, that you've had a pest and building inspection done on the actual property. The other thing that's very normal to have in your clauses is subject to finance. So with the subject to finance clause, if you can't get the finance to be able to buy that property, then you're not any worse off. You know, you can get all of your deposit back, provided you relinquish the property within the finance clause period, which is normally somewhere around the 21 days, something like that. Now, the next thing you need to do is to make sure that you've got enough other clauses in there to satisfy your needs. It might be subject to council approval. It might be subject to a satisfactory site inspection. It might be subject to perusal of the contract by your lawyer. It can be subject to absolutely anything, provided the seller of the property actually agrees to the conditions on the sale contract. So I call this putting your foot on the deal. You've got to secure the deal right up front. And in every state except New South Wales, this is how it works, and I think it's the better system. In New South Wales, they have a different contract law. And in New South Wales, you've got to get all your due diligence done before you really enter into the contract and do what they call exchange of the contract. Because you can sign a contract on a property in New South Wales and you have no security that the seller is going to sell that property to you until such time as you have exchanged contracts. So you basically swap contracts. And at that point in time, then you are unconditional. You cannot pull out of the contract. You must have your finance in place. You must have all of your due diligence done on that property. So it's a little bit different in New South Wales, but in the other states, it's actually very easy to secure the property and then go out and make sure that you've got all your due diligence done and that all of your cross your T's and dot your I's and all of that kind of stuff. You've got your feasibility fully quoted. You've got statements of profitability and things like that from your professionals so that you really know where you stand on that particular property. So that whole process is attacking something from the internet side of things. But there's a lot of other ways to get out there and find a property. And when you start concentrating and doing due diligence on certain areas, what you need to do is to become familiar with that particular area. If that's your target area, become familiar with it. Know everything possible about that particular area. You know the zonings. Know what zoning you need to have to be able to build units or subdivisions or what's going on in that area and what industry is going into that area and where the shopping centres are and where the hospitals are and where the schools are and where the universities are and where, you know, all the dynamics about the particular area. Know where the bus routes go and the train routes or the tram routes, depending on where you are in the country. Know the particular areas that are zoned for certain things. Know your council requirements. You know, what size can be broken down into a smaller block. What size, you know, and what zoning do you need to be able to build units on? And start to know your teams in the area as well. Your town planner and your surveyor and your professionals in the area that are going to be able to help you with the particular strategy that you're actually doing. Know your pricing. Know that this street's more highly priced than that street and units sell for this and houses sell for that and a two-bedder sells for this and a three-bedder sells for that and a four-bedder sells for that. And really know that pricing in the areas. And the only way to do that is to get out there and have a look. You know, go through open homes. Go and have a look at what is presenting and what the finishes are in certain areas. And, you know, get to know the builders. Get to know who built this and who built that one and who was the team that was used on that particular complex, etc. So really know your area very, very well. Know what the required setbacks are from the council, as an example. Like, that means how far you have to build your property in from the boundaries. You know, and get an A list of people in the area that can assist you with those matters on the particular strategy that you're actually working on, and keep that list beside you. You know, if, for instance, go back to my example of finding a subdivision block in Gloucester as an example in New South Wales. Well, I would have an A list of who the better real estate agents are there. I would have a list of who the terrible real estate agents are as well, because they're the ones I want to buy from, but I want to list my property with the good real estate agents. I would have a list of the town planners that I like and the surveyors that I like and the builders that I like and what their cost per square meter is and, you know, draftspeople and architects, etc. So I'd have a complete list of my A team in every area that I was actually working in. It's really, really important. Deals come from all sorts of avenues. You know, it's not good enough to sit in your home office and just play on the net. Now, yes, a lot of things are done on the net these days, but put yourself out there. Go and join groups, you know, and talk to people about what you do. You'll be astounded at how many deals can actually come through, oh, I know somebody who's doing that, or know somebody who's selling their property, or somebody who knows somebody. So get out there and be a bit social about this process as well. And even offer a finder's fee. You know, if somebody can find you a jolly good deal that suits your portfolio, offer a finder's fee. Say, hey, look, you know, if you bring me the right kind of deal, I'll pay you $5,000, you know, and no strings attached. If you bring me a good deal that I end up buying, I'll pay you $5,000 to do it. Now, I tell you what, $5,000 stimulates a lot of people. So the more people you've got out there actually looking for the type of deal that you want, the more deals are going to come your way. And also what you're also doing at this point in time is you're activating your reticular activating system. You're stating, you're speaking, you're putting your intention on what it is you actually want to achieve. And not only that, you're motivating and stimulating a whole lot of other people out there to get out there and fulfill that dream for you. You know, obviously for financial reward, but that's a good thing. One of the places that I always like to have a bit of a peruse around whenever I'm looking for a certain type of property is the probate offices. So all of the solicitors, well, this is the deceased estates, they go through the, they have to put the properties through probate. So you can actually see what's coming through deceased estates and those sort of things. And an extension of that is actually having a look at the public trustee sites. Now, public trustees are in every state and they manage a lot of deceased estates for individuals and that have died. And what they do is they normally just sell up the property and then divide the proceeds amongst the beneficiaries. So I always look at deceased estates so I can see what's coming up. I look at the public trustee auction sites. I would look at a public trustee auction site every week in the states in which I'm active. Some states are a little bit better than others. Some states, a lot more goes onto their actual sites than others, but definitely worth a look. While you're driving around and having a bit of a sticky beak around the place, get in and have a look at properties that seem to have been halted. So they might be partway through construction and then they've just sat there, not finished for a considerable amount of time. Now, this has been particularly prevalent in the last few years where we've had the GFC, where money's run out, builders have gone broke, they haven't been able to finish projects. And what we've actually seen is a lot of properties being able to be picked up partway through construction so that you end up with a deal that you can, obviously it's picking up on somebody else's misfortune, but at the same time you're picking up a good deal that, they might have had silly overruns and cost overruns that you're not having to go through that. So have a look for those partially finished construction that for whatever reason hasn't been able to complete, and then start digging and finding out why. New construction not sold is often an opportunity to be able to pick up under market value things that simply haven't sold. They've sat there on the market for a long period of time. And, the builder-developer wants to move on to the next project and will often shortcut the price or give you other things in the purchase which are not which don't appear on contract. Like one of my students, she wanted to buy in this particular complex and there was only a few left, and the builder developer was particularly interested in just trying to get rid of the last few that he possibly could so he could move on and go on to the next project. And in doing so, he wasn't prepared to reduce the price because that would affect his valuations across the other properties. But he was prepared to give her anything else she wanted, basically, to cut a deal. So you know what she asked for? She asked for a brand new BMW motor car. It was about a $70,000 or $80,000 car. And the day she settled on that property, she had a brand spanking new BMW sitting in the garage. And it didn't appear on any contracts, I can assure you, but that was an interesting one. Some of the people that I like to talk to on a regular basis are the mail couriers and the posties, because they're out and about all the time and they know when places have been neglected or, have been left derelict or the grass has grown too high and all this sort of thing, where you can start to see that a property has become unloved and consequently there's an opportunity there to get in and perhaps approach the owner of the property to pick it up and buy it, so it doesn't have to go through the normal sale process. And for starters, you save the commissions on the sale, and quite often you pick up the property under market value because the owner of the property doesn't actually know what they're sitting on or is in financial trouble and needs to just move it along. So make a habit of getting out there and talking to everybody and, get it known what you actually do and that you're always in the market for a good deal, and you'll pay a spotter's fee to somebody to actually find you that deal. Now, along those lines, get on the A-list of real estate agents. The more agents you've got out there specifically looking for the types of deals that you're after, and ring them up every 1 or 2 weeks. chat to the better ones and say, look, you know, how are things going, and have you found a deal yet that might suit my criteria, and what else is happening in the area. You would be astounded at how much information you can actually gain simply by talking to people. You know, make it a habit to talk to 10 or 12 people every day in this particular business. It's not just internet-based, believe me. It's important to continually check the media. Now, you know, putting alerts on internet sites and things like that, specifically for any new properties that are listed that meet your criteria, is obviously a good idea. But you can also check all of the other media. Now, admittedly, most things go through the internet these days, but check the little local papers, check the little ads, the private sales in the back, check the trading post. You know, check all of those things that are alternate to the mainstream internet stuff that you would normally do. I was talking before about the public trustees, another good source of properties that are normally in some form of distress sale is the bankruptcy courts and the liquidators. Now, they tend to have more commercial type properties, and if you're in the commercial market, it's a great place to go fossicking. You know, some people go and fossick in the dump shop or at secondhand shops. I go and fossick in the liquidator's stock and see what they've got coming up and see what's for sale. Because they, when a company goes into liquidation or receivership and management, they go through a process of actually selling up the assets. And particularly for commercial property, although sometimes they do have residential property, it's a great place to really negotiate on a property, because their whole purpose is to sell it basically to recoup the cost for the person that's put them into liquidation. And if that's a bank, all they really need to be concerned about is covering the debts of the bank and any, you know, anything that is a secured creditor. And that's their charter. That's what they have to do. So it's a great place to go and negotiate. Abandoned properties we've talked about with respect to, you know, your mail couriers and stuff, but get out there and have a walk. You know, one of my students a few years ago, she just had a baby, and she wanted to get out and lose the baby weight. And so what she would do is every day she would get out and she would walk the neighbourhood with the baby in the pram. And obviously it was good for the baby as well. But what she would specifically look at is properties that have been left or abandoned or that have long grass. And she would then go home and find out who the owner of the property was, what it is, what size it was, whether it suited her. And that's actually how she found her first three deals. And she did that while she was still really a stay-at-home mum with her baby. Look for real estate wanted ads. You know, there's, place a real estate wanted ad. You'd be surprised how many people are out there reading their little local mail, and whilst they haven't put their property on the market or considered it, when they see a real estate wanted ad, they'll go, you know, I might actually ring that person up and see what they're after. And it's surprising how many deals actually come from that sort of, that sort of ad. And what does it cost you? $10, $20 or something rather to run a little private ad in the back of some of those little free magazines that go around to the papers or even the local newspapers. Definitely worth a look. Obviously, there are people that have fire sale properties all the time. You know, there's people who are divorcing, there's people who are committed elsewhere, there's owners that are moving. You're going to get that sort of deal anywhere. And the more people you talk to, whether it be, you know, the mums at the soccer club or whether it be real estate agents, and tell them specifically what you're after, you would be astounded at how much people know and are happy to pass on to you if you just give them a chance. You know, just give them the opportunity to help you find the deal that you're actually after. Friends and referrals, you know, the more people you can get out there and talk to about what you're actually looking for, the more people you've got on the ground to help you with that stuff. You can even in business cards. You know, I hate these business cards that have got nothing written on them, although they look really super trendy and whatever else, but you can't tell what the person does. You know, they've got a name and a phone number, but you've got no idea what they do. You don't know whether they're a hairdresser or a builder or a buyer's agent. If you've got a card and you want people to remember you and help you with something like finding a property, tell them on the card what you're after. Tell them you pay $5,000 finder's fee for somebody to find you a deal. Ask them to ring up and ask you what kind of deal you're after. You know, put on there what you want. Drive the neighbourhoods. If you don't feel like walking around, get out there and have a bit of a drive and just look for properties. Look for buildings that have already been completed in what you're trying to do, whether that's a commercial or whether it's a block of units. You know, get out there and really have a look at what's round and what's renting and what's selling and what's in demand and what there's actually a shortage of. Yes, you can put all your alerts on the internet, but the best thing to do is to get out there and be interactive. A combination of the two is what is really going to make the difference for you. Anyway, that's my ranting for today. I hope that's helped you. I've got a little bit of a cold today, so I'm a little bit croaky. I hope that hasn't affected the recording for you. I'm actually sitting at Living Valley Springs at the north part of the Sunshine Coast at Kim Kim, and I'm going through a whole, you know, health checkup thingy that they do, and it's very, very lovely. So I hope you've enjoyed that from my little spot here on my veranda, and I'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon. So get out there, talk to people. It's not just about internet searches and databases. It's very much more than that. And the more you do, the more you're going to find, the easier it's going to be, and the more fun you're going to have. So, guys, that's it for me. I'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.